Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. This is episode 51. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this evening?
We are really good. Just brilliant.
All right, good. Man, if only I was rolling before I started rolling.
It would not be
appropriate. It would be, but it would be colorful. It would
it
be
would
colorful.
Be colorful.
And we would be very popular right now.
And we'd probably get in trouble from some parents out there.
Yes, we know kids listen to this.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. We met one of our younger viewers.
We did.
Met
Zach.
Viewers and listeners
Zach.
Tonight. Yeah, yes. He came in tonight.
He's wonderful. Hi, Zach.
Yep.
Hi, Zach.
All right. Zach mentioned that he was behind on listening to these, so it's probably going to be well until he hears this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So welcome to the future. Anyway, speaking of things in the future that we were waiting to have happen, Secret Wars is over.
Woo-hoo.
What does this mean, Chris?
Means he gets a bit of his life back.
Yeah.
You wrote a bit of a novella regarding all these.
How many pages would you say you committed to that project?
More than 60,000 words.
Great googly muggly.
Yeah. Average of about 500 per article, 125 particles. Articles.
Articles and particles.
Additionals. And I did like a final recap on our main website, on the comicsdungeon.com website, basically like saying like, what did this all mean by the end of it and why I want to die?
And as you informed us before we started rolling, you have, what, a week, 2 week reprieve, and then we have the next events coming?
There's three Marvel events all kind of happening at the same time.
Now, is this what we were talking about last week, where it's more of like a blatant money grab?
Yes.
And
so
it's pretty clear.
Three more happening simultaneously?
Yep.
Yeah, like one of them is going into titles that probably have lower sales, and they're trying to boost that because of this event.
Okay.
Yep. So, you know, we might have lower numbers on things, and what happened previously is that we would run out of those issues because we wouldn't have enough to sustain for that sort of event.
Right.
Who knows who's going to want to buy into it and when.
Right.
And if we'll have enough at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to give you a little breather between events?
Nope. Not at all. And guess what? DC announced that they're going to relaunch possibly the entire company again. So,
now what?
Yeah.
Relaunch?
So,
like, are they
so
going to
foolish
rebrand? Because I know when they did the new 52, or maybe it was after the new 52, they came up with that new fancy new logo.
Yeah. The sticker logo. Yeah, it might be a rebrand.
Yeah.
I mean, they're desperate right now. And yes, Secret Wars ended, and it's just they're not willing to let anything go, it seems. But I will say that the final issue of Secret Wars, and the whole run, when you just read the main run, was very entertaining. Beautiful artwork, and I thought it was a really good handling on the Fantastic Four mythos at the end of it. So without spoiling anything.
It was really good.
Yeah. I was happy with the main plot and its final material. I just didn't like the corporatization of it, the sheer eventness of everything, and also it being late, having very negative effects on comic book stores in general.
Right, right.
So yeah.
So going back to Marvel and their three new events. Two new events?
Three. Oh, yeah, sorry. That was just me going like, duh.
Oh,
yeah.
Which sounds like two, duh. But it's really just
duh. All right.
Yeah. Because it's one of them is something of Apocalypse, because the movie, the X-Men movie with Apocalypse is coming.
Right.
It's like, yeah, okay, you have to do that. But then there's an Avengers one called Pleasantville or Standoff.
Standoff, and then some Pleasantville something.
It's the kickoff. Like they go to a place called Pleasantville, and I think it's full of supervillains. I don't know. But that's like going to take place in all the Avengers books, and like Captain America, and like the Illuminati, and a bunch of others.
Yeah, that's the one that's going to go into all those different titles that I was just referring
okay.
to.
Okay.
And then they just announced one that was I think it's called like Spider Women or something. So it's only within three books, like, but you have to read all three of the Spider Lady titles, which
Women,
is
Silk and Gwen.
Yes, Woman, Silk and Gwen. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
and so it's just like, but but can't you just let people want their one thing?
Yeah.
You know?
No, they can't.
You would,
go.
Yeah, you would think they would give you, they would give at least wait a while between events.
Yeah, yeah, seriously, because it's all pretty expensive too.
Maybe they had all, maybe they had planned on doing that all along, except that Secret Wars
was so late.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm sure that's a factor too. Then you should change your entire publishing schedule, which you did. But you should really actually do it with mercy instead of like, sheer. I don't know what greed.
Torture.
Yes.
Torture greed.
Yeah.
Avarice.
Yeah. Avarice.
I mean, usually there was like, you know, the Marvel summer event or something like that. Like, you know, do a seasonal thing. Like, give us one every quarter, maybe, if you're going to do that, and spread it out. So
yeah.
It's not
make them smaller and self-contained.
Yeah.
So this obviously bodes poorly for the industry, particularly superhero storytelling, right?
Yeah, I think
so. For the genre.
Yeah. Superheroes are in trouble this year, I think.
Supervillains are taking over.
Well, they've done that story a bunch.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
There's a very interesting interview that just went up with the Eric Stevenson of Image. And like he straight up says like exactly what we're saying. And it's very refreshing to hear somebody from one of the large companies being like, yeah, this whole renumbering thing and relaunching events is horrible and you're murdering us.
Yeah, it's killing stuff. And
when everything's the number one, nothing's the number one.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, he has percentages to back it up too. Like, you know,
there's no longevity with that.
Yeah.
It means there's no confidence in the actual product.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like you obviously don't think you can actually sell Spider-Man for one good run. You have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it and just like and not doing it well.
Not doing and, it well. Yeah, this became like an LLJ song.
And even from a folklore aspect of storytelling, you continually confuse and uproot your audience. Okay. You know they've one of the things about the staying power of comic books is how people share the stories when they've read them, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've got to keep going back to the source, say like you guys at the comic book store, and have that, you know, the dealer explain what the story is so you can get back on board, because people do come in and
even the renumbering thing, especially because you're like, this is volume one from the one that's back there, but this is the number one from the new one, but it's the same team, but they just renumbered it, and you're like, oh my god.
Well, psychologically that's jarring to any reader who wants to invest in the continuity of a story.
And here's a worst case scenario too, as far as miscommunication among new demographics. There's the Silk title, and that was bringing in new readers and, you know, young female demographic readers as well. And when the Secret Wars final issue came out that, you know, ended that run so it could relaunch, the last page just shows, you know, the planet blowing up and the title ending. And there's no blurb saying Silk will be back in Silk number one. They didn't say that. Mm-hmm. So I read people online being like, that's too bad. I really like the title. But it's just like, no, it's coming back. I've ordered it. It's on the way. But Marvel didn't let people know that.
Yeah, like you're just still kind of, they're still like trying to work with the fan base they already have, but they're even alienating them.
Of course.
And then on top of it, the new readers don't have what you said, the information to be able to go like, oh, I'm going to come back in a couple months. Instead, they're gone now. That's it. Maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll wander in for something else and find out.
Oh, this is here.
Yeah. But that's a big if.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You just can't count on it.
And DC's doing the same thing too with their rebrand. They're alienating their audiences potentially.
I think
we don't know yet.
The moment that became news yesterday, 2 days ago, something like that, and the past of the future, I had 3 or 4 customers immediately be like, I said, I think it's a jumping off point. And they're like, yep.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm out. You know,
and I've heard that over the last couple years with renumberings and rebrandings and all this stuff of people being like, great jumping off point. It's like, we don't want to hear that. But at the same time, we understand why.
At the same time, too, they just announced that they are doing comics based on the Hanna-Barbera brands. And
yes.
If they canceled everything and relaunched, like instead of Batman, we get El Kabong, I'm down with that.
Yeah, there's some people freaking out online. I saw some people who that's their jam.
I want some Quick Draw McGraw.
Right?
So,
Well, John,
Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest, you know, would be great. I think he is.
Scooby-Doo, well, there's that whole. I posted that on the Panel Jumper page today. I saw it on IO9. But yeah, they're putting all their big adventure characters together: Herculoids, Space Ghosts,
right?
Characters, Birdman. You know, characters that have kind of been tainted by the Cartoon Network's, you know, goofy take on
right.
them. But particularly Johnny Quest. You know, through Adventure Brothers. Yeah.
But I love that.
Which I really did.
Yeah.
But I love the look. I love the look they've from the look of the Herculoids. You know, how they kind of redesigned them. I will probably invest some time in that.
Great news.
What's that?
I heard Jeff Parker is going to be writing some of this stuff.
I know. Oh, it makes me happy.
That means that it's going to be fun.
Yep.
And that's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right, so look for the comics industry destroying themselves in the
yes.
coming year.
Through form of a crisis. But yeah.
Exactly. So the next thing on the show sheet here is only here because I write the show sheet, and when I think of something that I want to fix that I said previously, I get to do that. And so a couple episodes ago, we talked about Idris Elba being rumored to play Roland in The Gunslinger,
yes.
and he's now been confirmed.
Awesome.
That came out.
Wonderful.
And I don't know if Matthew McConaughey was confirmed to be Randall Flagg, and y'all asked me, I think you asked me who I wanted Randall Flagg to be.
Yeah.
And just off the top of my head, I said Danny Trejo. But now I've got a better option.
What you got?
No, he needs to be suave.
David Morrissey from The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Yeah?
Is that the governor?
It's the governor.
Yeah. I like him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I
That's
see
all
it,
I
yeah.
wanted to say. I'm like, he would be a great
He'd be
Randall
great.
Flagg.
Yeah.
Okay, now, moving on.
Now that we figured that out for you, Hollywood.
You're welcome, Hollywood.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. That I've
I know you tune
myself.
In every week.
So, a new trailer for Suicide Squad came out. We've been talking about this movie for a while, and there was an article that came out. It was on a number of websites. I found it on hitfix.com. But the premise of the article is that the Suicide Squad fails Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And the gist of the article is it fails her in her origin story. It mm-hmm. changes yeah. her origin story.
I like that article a lot.
Yeah. So, it takes her choice of being Harley Quinn away from her and gives it to the Joker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, which is really important to fans.
Yeah, it takes away her authority.
Especially,
or her
agency.
Yeah. Thank you.
And there's been a lot of fans, especially female fans, who really relate to Harley rising above an abusive relationship and all of those types of things and choosing all of these different things for her life. And that being taken away, I feel like just strips a whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harley.
It's boring, too.
It's really boring.
Because I gave up well before they showed the new origin for the new 52, and they did that in an issue of Suicide Squad. And just looking at the pages that I saw online, it's like, it's just boring. Like, oh, you shove her into a vat, and it looks kind of victim-y.
Yeah. Right?
And then it's just like, oh, and now
you're
pale.
Just mimicking the origin of the Joker when you do that anyway.
Well, and the person who wrote the article, which I don't have the name here, just says, any two-bit criminal can throw a person in a vat of chemicals and create a super villainous sidekick.
Right.
So it's like it's like an easy gimmick. And
yeah, you took the Joker down a peg by doing that too.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he.
So go back and watch the original Batman: The Animated Series, which is better written and better
and
performed, and
it's got such complexity to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a marvelous show.
It's really good.
Yeah, she was a multi-dimensional character with all these different flaws, and who developed over time.
Right.
Kick her into a vat. So yeah.
Well, and it's one of those things that, you know, like we discuss in the forthcoming Howard the Duck episode of the Panel Jumper, where
it'll come out soon, I swear.
It wasn't a dig, Ben. It's
always a dig.
It's an archaeological dig now.
We'll just deal with this, you know, off mic.
No, Grove Worthing tonight.
We're dealing with it now.
When a character the character star rises quickly and becomes, you know, exceptionally marketable for, you know, reasons based on the fact that they are well written and well constructed,
mm-hmm.
and then someone else gets their hands on them and reshapes them through a focus group to be what they think the audience is expecting.
Right.
Same thing happened with Howard the Duck. Same thing has happened with Harley. I mean, we wouldn't know anything about Harley had she not been this really well-crafted character through the course of the animated series and a lot of the comic books
mm-hmm.
up to prior to the New 52. She wouldn't have been on anybody's radar,
right.
is my point.
Yeah.
And there was also a little bit in there about her over-sexualization in the movie, having like the tiniest booty shorts ever, which kind of throws back to her New 52 sort of styles.
In
the beginning, the New 52 reboot, she was wearing a corset that was busting open and, you know, fighting things.
Because that's how you fight.
Because
evil.
That's how you fight things. And whatever. Your superpower is that everything stays contained somehow magically.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. The author of the article also lays blame on the video game Arkham Asylum for Harley's
wardrobe. Looks like sexy nurse, sexy stripper nurse. And her proportions are way off as well. So there's also an inconsistency.
So they Lara Crofted her?
No. I mean, even worse than that, because Lara Croft has like a skinny white girl butt, and Harley is like an hourglass, you know, is no problem, but that's just not the Harley that we know. It's inconsistent.
I saw a review of the last Arkham game, and like they said, the storytelling through the game developers was well done, but then there's like a downloadable content where you can play as Harley, and they freeze framed on her, or like we're in the character option scenes, and she's breathing, she's moving, and her face is like this horribly frozen caricature of humanity, but her breasts are delicately lighted and heaving and just like so much attention to detail there. But and then like she speaks and it's like a mannequin speaking, and it's just like, well, now I wonder what
want a vapid woman.
Yes.
I don't think I'm too terribly wrong or out of place when I say that a majority of video game developers are male.
Right.
But I actually think that in this case, there are women out there who somehow identify with that, because their way through life is by over-sexualizing themselves to get through life. Mm-hmm. So I actually feel that they're going to be fans who are like, yeah, this Harley's great. And they're going to be lady types. And that's going to be their jam, because that's how they see the world. And some of us are not. We've had our awakening, and we see that you can have all sides of things, and you don't have to go one way. So I feel like you're not just going to get the male gaze in this one.
Right.
Yeah. I feel it's going to cross over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So when going back to like the trailer for Suicide Squad, Batman v Superman, the trailers for that, the teaser for that, kind of came out at the same time. And at the time, I was all like, BVS looks stupid. I kind of want to see Suicide Squad. And how do we feel about Suicide Squad now? Has it dropped a peg?
I think the production value looks interesting. They know it didn't look like the most horribly visual thing as far as like special effects and all that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It still feels like it's preaching to the lowest common denominator of just violence and you know, immature jokes and stuff like that. And it's like, then that can be fine. But when everything is like that, because Deadpool's coming up, and that's all that's going to be.
Yeah, that's what that
I heard there's a new ad out where it's basically like a testicular jokes like nonstop or something.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, but like we're going to get nothing but that for like a couple months here.
Right.
Dark, grimdark, gritty, and
diverse. Dirty jokes.
Yeah, and dirty jokes and like sexy times. And it's okay to make fun of the fact that she has voices in her head, which she's never had, you know, stuff like that. It's just like, and there's going to be people who love it. I think it's going to make money. I'm a little scared by that. Yeah. But, you know, whatever.
I kind of feel at this point that I'm going to see a DC movie if there are people around me who are interested in it and invite me out.
Yes.
I really think that might be the only way I go see these. Unless they're at like Redbox for $1 you know, a year from now or something. Because it was like the Batman movie. Not the Batman movie. The Superman movie. I never saw that. And the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie, I never saw that. And I kept thinking, like, maybe, no, no. And no one around me cared. So I was like, oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
I'll skip that one.
Cool. All right. And in Suicide Squad, there is the Juggalo Joker. I like to call him the Juggaloker. played by Jared Leto. And which Chris brought up this topic. Let's talk about our favorite Jokers. Now, I'm going to let all y'all go first, because I have to tell you, I don't think I have one.
You like them all by that? Or you just don't have any that you care for?
I don't read the comics.
Right.
I haven't watched the cartoon. My Jokers are Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson, first of all.
Right.
And
The Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero, thank you. Yes. So, you know,
Romero, high five. Yeah.
They say, you know, it, in relation to Doctor Who, your first Doctor is your favorite. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go in Joker's, your first Joker is your favorite. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ergo, Jack Nicholson.
Oh. Yeah, that's mm-hmm.
my favorite Joker.
All right.
Oh, I said I was going to go first. I guess I did. Cole Hornaday, who's your favorite Joker?
I totally adhere to that constant that your first Joker is your favorite. I grew up with Cesar Romero and his soaped out mustache, which yep. I never understood as a kid.
He refused yep. to shave it. Yep. That's why.
Now, I do want to bring up, when I brought this up, it wasn't exclusive to media Joker.
Right.
Comic Jokers are free game too.
All right. But the Joker that I felt was truest to my vision of Joker was Mark Hamill's Joker in Batman the Animated Series. Uh-huh. I love the design work in that show, and he was the perfect voice casting. And he really kind of came back into public consciousness following the Star Wars movies and doing that kind of work. And, mm-hmm. and people, when I would point out that that was Luke Skywalker doing the voice of that Joker, they didn't believe me, you right. know, because it was so unique. As far as the comics are concerned, you know, I am, I'm still about the kinder, gentler, you know, there was the era with the Steve Englehart and Marshall Rogers, Detective Comics. I like that look of that Joker. He was conniving. That's where we get the Joker fish. Yes. Thank you. Which they do in the animated series eventually too. I love those quirky, silly stories that bordered on the Silver Age, goofiness, but had an edge. And you know, and then we get the Frank Miller Joker, which I thought was terrifying at the time. And in retrospect, you know, it's hard to be a fan of Frank Miller for obvious reasons. But at the time, that was kind of groundbreaking look for the Joker. So, but I think it's still going to be Mark Hamill.
All right. Nicole, what about, who's your favorite Joker?
I have to agree with you. I mean, Jack Nicholson is my first, but yeah. Mark Hamill Joker is one of my favorites. I don't have a lot of experience with the comics either, so yeah. I only have a smattering of Joker and comic lore.
Yeah. I like Mark Hamill's Joker. I don't have, I haven't seen a lot of it, but after watching The Force Awakens, I sat down and I went through a bunch of YouTube clips of Mark Hamill, like not of the cartoon, but of Mark Hamill doing the voice,
right.
which is a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Chris, who's your favorite Joker?
So my first is Mark Hamill, and if we're talking, if we keep it just to movies or cartoons, then yes, he would be. But I was always very partial to Grant Morrison's concept of what the Joker really was, mm-hmm. which was that he was almost a cipher, or truly just an actor, and that he could alter his personality continually to change. And that's why you could explain that for a while he would be this terrifying serial killer. And then in a couple years, Robin could beat him with a joke. And they would laugh and then put him in a car and with the cops. And then he would flip and change again. And so he was never a constant personality. He was an identity that he was always experimenting and changing like an actor. And then for that particular run, at the end of it, he kind of turned into this weird Marilyn Manson-esque kind of monster. And then he kind of flipped back after that. So mm-hmm. just that, like, the identity fluidity mm-hmm. of that concept I really loved. And Neil Gaiman did something with that too in his like 2-3 issue whatever Batman run, where like the Joker was a concept, and like there was an alternate reality where it was actually Alfred who became the Joker as a role to play out for Bruce's sanity or something. Mm-hmm. So like that kind of stuff I really love as an idea. So that would be my favorite overall,
and including the Arkham Asylum graphic novel persona.
Yeah, the Grant Morrison one there.
Which was really, really super creepy.
Yep.
Because which offended a lot of people in the LGBT community.
Well, and they changed a lot, too.
But he was such a sexual threat to Batman.
Yeah, they changed a lot, too. They actually were going to cancel the whole project.
Right.
And Grant Morrison had to fight and compromise. Right. And he was just like, okay, no Madonna bra, but you'll let me have heels.
Yep.
Because
you just got done reading.
I'm working. I'm almost done with it.
It's Gods and...
Super Gods.
I wouldn't say Gods.
I'm a very slow reader when it comes to books.
It's a really good book. Grant Morrison's Super Gods. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to book report, everybody. Kay. And let's start with Nicole. What did you read this week?
Really? Well, I guess I'll start with Faith, number one.
Yay!
Do you do Faith?
No.
Okay.
You are good.
Okay, good. So it's a she's not a new character, but she has a new mini series from Valiant Publishing, or I guess they're Valiant Entertainment, and it's written by Jody Hauser, and the art is by Marguerite Sauvage in some sections and Francis Portella, and she has superpowers. A lot of the stuff in Valiant is all superpower type people or some sort of supernatural
or something.
Yeah. So she used to be part of a team called the Harbinger.
The book is Harbinger.
The Renegades. And she's recently broken off from that and broken up with her boyfriend and trying to do it alone, just doing it on her own. And it's a pretty fun first issue. And the only qualms that I have with it is her body type changing, because she is like a fat superhero. She's a plus size superhero.
Right.
I'm not saying that derogatory. She is. And it's wonderful. And I've been so excited for this. But I find that she does fluctuate throughout the art. And that is the only disappointing thing. Otherwise, I thought the story went really well. And I liked the scenes that Marguerite Sauvage did, because it was her like fantasy world when
she's saving Chris Pine.
Saving Chris. Yeah. Yeah. So, nice. So she's having these little fantasies about cute boys and stuff like that. So I find
There's doggies.
There is doggies. She's just like, don't touch the puppies. No shooting at puppies. Because she's stopping all these people. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it's a good issue because I've so been looking forward to it. And I think it's a 4-issue miniseries. And we are doing variant covers for each of those. I know we had talked about that previously.
And they just came in.
Yeah, and our first one is her flying around the Space Needle, because Seattle, and they're all going to be Seattle-themed after that. And I'm even forming a ladies' night in February around it.
Oh, excellent.
So it's an epic thing. I'm very excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for ladies' night, check out comicsdungeon.com.
It'll be Valentine's Day weekend. So you
Valentine's
can go
Day weekend.
Oh, cool. Come in for the ladies' night and then have Sunday for yourself or your honeys.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right. Faith, Volume 1 from Valiant. Cole Hornaday.
Yeah, I read the new DC Swamp Thing, first issue of the miniseries, a 6-part series, written by the Swamp Thing creator Len Wein and drawn by Kelly Jones. And for those familiar with horror comics, there is no better, there's no horror artist who pays better tribute to the style of Bernie Wrightson than Kelly Jones. And I think that's what they were clearly trying to capture, was the old feel of the original post-Silver Age Swamp Thing comic book. It's good. I enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed Kelly Jones' artwork tremendously. You know, his series, like from Dark Horse, was it The Hammer? That was the very Lovecraftian.
The Hammer, yeah.
Yeah, the series. And I didn't care for his Batman stuff, because I don't think his style really lended itself to the Batman stories. And then there's the Elseworlds vampire stuff. The thing that strikes me about this particular series is that there are writers who don't adapt their style to the age. Mm-hmm. And you see that when, let's say a writer from the 80s or the 90s will come back and visit a reboot, or there'll be like a special anniversary event. And, you know, like people like Louise Simonson and Chris Claremont, their style is so clearly locked in that time period. And I'm afraid Wein is another one of those writers where his language just feels so clunky now. And I'm reading it going, as a writer, you don't ever read this out loud, do
right.
you? Because these words don't fit in real people's mouths. And we didn't think about these. Maybe, I don't know if readers back in the day, back in the Silver Age, back in the, you know, what's after silver? Bronze?
Bronze.
Yeah.
You know, if they thought about that at all, but it feels clunky. I think that modern comic book writers, they get that, and they write very realistic dialogue and prose. I'm going to keep reading it. I'm enjoying it because it does have this really nice, solid, nostalgic feel to it. That Convergence mini did not have. In fact, I don't think I finished reading that.
Yeah, it's difficult.
So, the new Swamp Thing.
Yay!
All Welcome right. back to an old friend.
Yay, Swamp Thing. All right, what about you, Chris?
So I've had a very long, hectic week. And I needed something to cheer me up, and I also needed something quick. And so I pulled out one of my favorite comics in my entire collection, and it was a gift to me from a young kid that came into the store, like something like, actually more than 6 years ago, probably more than 10 years ago.
Really? That long ago?
He's probably in middle school ago. Now, right?
He's probably in college.
He's in graduate school.
Yeah. So, yes, it's by Jamie. And so he came in one day, and he was like six when he came in, and his parents were like, he's really excited to give you something. And he made a comic book for us. And it's called Dragon Attack of the Robo Dragon. And it's short enough that I can just read it here real quick, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And this is all hand-drawn by Jamie, and once there was a dragon, he was very powerful and big. One day, robot came. Roar. They started fighting. The fight was long. Boom. Roar. Dragon took the body of his foe to space. Things are getting real here. Ooh. Then the robot dragon woke up, and they had to fight. It was longer than last time. This is already better than Convergence. Then a mysterious gem appeared that could destroy anything. Dragon took it to a copy machine, and I absolutely love that part.
It's my favorite.
Then Dragon started to beating up the robot. There's some fight scenes here, and then there's one big splash page with the two of them fighting, and it has on the top a caption that says, Flip-O-Rama. And then there's another page, and he took the gem and the copy gem and stabbed Robo Dragon with it. Then the robot dragon was defeated. Yay. Dragon went home and was happy. Sometimes he got angry. The end. I think it's a masterpiece.
Wait, isn't there Coming Soon on the back?
Coming Soon, yeah. Dragon versus Monster. Remember that whole talk we had about comics that never finished or never came out again?
Yeah.
Sadly, we never got. But the next one is also featuring more Flip-O-Rama.
Hey.
Yes.
I will say, I appreciate the, we talk about letterers in comics, and I appreciate the lettering. Yes. It is that delightfully six-year-old script that, yeah. You know, somebody who's just learned how to write.
And I'm going to, when we post this all up, I'm going to include a couple scans.
Please
of
do.
It too.
Yeah, it's really marvelous.
And, and so it's also printed on better paper quality than most Marvel comics.
I commented
no
on that.
Rub at all.
Yeah, that's
no
right. This is smudge when you try to read it.
Yep, yep. So, yes, Jamie, I hope he is writing comics in the future soon.
No kidding.
What's it called in Dragon?
Dragon Attack of the Robot. Robot Dragon. It's in Cran. It's in heavy Cran.
Right.
So I got to make that up.
All right, self-published.
In Crayonorama.
Yeah.
Number one. It's only number
rare.
One.
All right. The rarest comic ever. And I have it.
Nice. Okay, well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week, our quiz questions come to us from, let's see, how do you pronounce this?
And this is
Calais.
A great segue because the theme of this week's Perfect Bound podcast trivia questions is Here Be Dragons.
Ooh.
So, yes, they're all dragon-themed questions.
Oh,
all right, lay it on us, Cole.
Okay, first off, he is the mystical dragon who menaced the hidden kung fu paradise of Kunlun, from which the martial arts master Iron Fist attained his power and signature chest brand by defeating in combat. I knew this is going to kill Chris. Shaolu, the Undying. They'll get easier. Hold on. Once a mindless android menace of the Fantastic Four, the Saurian Simpleton became a genius-level chaperone and mentor to students of the Future Foundation.
Dragon Man.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the centuries-old Machiavellian aegis of the multiple generations of Khans who led the Atlas Foundation and eventually Agents of Atlas.
I read that. I don't
know. What?
It's the one that Golden Claw worked with.
That's right. Yeah, the Yellow Claw, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Mr. Lau.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember that.
This is the cute alien creature who was a longtime companion of the X-Men's Kitty Pryde.
Chris is now pointing
to the
goal.
I don't remember that. I can't remember that.
Lockheed.
Lockheed,
there
yes.
Lockheed,
yeah.
Was and his last name
I
Martin?
Had
No, he only had one name. And lastly...
I think we can guess
She's
what this
ready
is.
Ready for this one.
Yeah, I'm ready for it.
Lastly, he is the immortal dragon from outer space, once known for his wardrobe of purple shorts. Originally appearing in Strange Tales number 89 in 1961, and one of a million Lee Kirby Silver Age monster tales, eventually became the nemesis of Iron Man and nearly the entire Marvel Universe.
Want to do it together?
Fin Fang Foom.
That's right. And that's our trivia for the week.
Thank you, Cole. And thank you, everybody, for listening. You can find everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. You can also subscribe to the Perfect Bound podcast on iTunes or any RSS reader of your choice. You can come to Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, just north of Seattle. Well, technically, we're in Seattle. The mailing address is Seattle, Washington, but, you know, the neighborhood is Wallingford. Or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.